You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 3rd, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from way, way out in front of Jim Inhofe's imaginary gay friends pride parade. It's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Gotta say, Jim Inhofe, who's the guy who brought the snowball onto the floor of the Senate to show that climate change isn't real?
I found it's snowing, and so it's no climate change.
Yeah.
And people elect him.
His reaction to last Friday's Supreme Court ruling was the most creative, I think. He said that his gay friends were disappointed.
Yeah, in the sense that he has created imaginary gay friends. And imputed to them an opinion that only Jim Inhofe and his creepy buddies believe.
I think you said it best when you said, you mean Lindsey Graham?
Yeah. Other than Lindsey Graham, who could you be talking about,
Jim Inhofe? Who could you possibly be talking about?
Yeah. And you know what? I would believe that he has, because Washington is a very...
Probably a third of his staff at least is gay. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we've read articles about that before, that the culture of Washington is you work all the time and family men can't do that.
No.
So, you know, there is a gay staffer
culture
there. Yeah. Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise
And among
me,
the Republican Party, a closeted gay culture, you know,
that your four gay friends, you know, three of your staffers are Uriah Heep.
Three of your staffers and Lindsey Graham all are very disappointed in this ruling.
Oh, you're so right, Senator Inhofe.
You're so right. Oh, disappointed.
How are you so wise, Jim Inhofe? You know, yeah, of course, those are your suck up friends.
Yeah.
Before we begin
in the meat of our podcast, we want to thank everybody.
It was an amazing week.
Yeah, well, we got so many letters of support from people who have ADHD, who have kids with ADHD, who have fights with their insurance company, who know what it's like to be a mom, who were touched by Junior Dude's appearance on the podcast, and the outpouring of love and support. It was very humbling, and that's it. I'm not going to cry again because I made so many people cry last week.
I know.
And that's not nice. I don't like making people cry. I'm a Cancerian, and so I love to cry.
Yeah.
Crying is my thing. But this is a family, and you guys are part of our circle of love, and we so appreciate you. And we should also add that for now, Junior Dude's prescription situation is under control.
Mm-hmm.
His doctor, and I wrote to everyone who wrote to me to ask, how is it going?
Yeah.
And I also put it on Facebook and tried to get the word out because people were concerned. The doctor wrote a prescription for 1 month for a medication, an alternate medication that is covered by insurance. And now it's a matter of seeing how he tolerates that. He started it last Friday and he left yesterday, Wednesday. We're recording this Thursday night. He left yesterday for, summer vacation with his dad. He'll be gone for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But for the time between Friday and Wednesday, he was tolerating it quite well and I think was sleeping a little better. Yeah. And, this probably isn't as strong a medication as he was on. So we may have to go through all of this again once school starts.
Yeah,
I have to burn that bridge when I come to it.
Yep.
But it is just kind of it's always on my mind every month that, you know, how is he doing and are we going to fill this and how is it going to affect him and so forth. So as a mother and a patron.
Well, and this is a function.
I've been a mess this week, but we got it under control.
Well, and this is a function of this very distinctly organic, homegrown DIY podcast.
Yeah.
Which is, we have a certain time during the week. There are like maybe three or four intervals during the week when we have time and conditions are right when we can actually sit down and record this. And we love doing this. But it's like Belgian beer. in one sense, I'm sure I'm getting this wrong, and all the beer freaks will correct me. You know, you leave the vat open, and whatever is floating around in the air, whatever pollens, whatever else is in the air, gets into the beer. Whatever's happening in our lives when this podcast, we don't go up on top of the glass mountain and speak in Olympian tones about all the little people down there. That's what David Brooks does. That's his job.
Uh-huh.
Whatever's happening right now is what you're going to hear. And it just so happened last week, right now was...
we just got this phone call right as I was sitting down to record. And the phone rang.
We were like, you know, we have this commitment. We record every week.
You kept saying, do you want to try to do this later? And I said, I don't know if we will have time to do this later. So we did it when we did it. And we don't like missing a week, so we don't miss a week. But we had the rug pulled out from under us right before we recorded, and that's what happened.
So that's what you heard.
In real life.
If great news happens, you'll hear that too.
And that's right.
If a cat is throwing up in the background, you'll probably hear that.
I'll try to edit that.
Yeah. But this is just what's going on here in the Shire week to week.
And because we recorded Thursday, we missed two big news stories that happened on Friday. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm sorry about that. News just happens when it happens. But it was revealed that Antonin Scalia's safe word is pure applesauce.
Yeah. Wow.
And the win for marriage equality is wonderful and amazing. And the real outpouring of there are pockets of resistance. And there were pockets of resistance in 1964, too, and more serious pockets of resistance than we have now, I think. I'm pleased to see how many people are amused by the pockets of resistance rather than outraged, because they're going to come around or not, or they're going to quit their jobs as county clerk.
Right. They can refuse
all they get fired.
Yeah, exactly. They can refuse all they want. They're refuseniks. Can refuse all they want, and then eventually they'll be fired, or they'll be ousted, or they'll be worked around, or something will be done about them. But you cannot believe me. It was as big a shock to me as anyone to learn last week that George Bush was never president. Because 5-4 decisions by the unelected lawyers don't count, apparently, according to a whole lot of Republican candidates for president.
5-4 counted in Bush v. Gore.
Yeah.
5-4 counted in Hobby Lobby.
Yeah.
I will tell you, the one thing that made me sad about this ruling was Junior Dude's reaction about the ACA ruling, which was, wow, and it was 6-3, Mom, not 5-4 like normal.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That's what he said.
I know. And it would have been, you know, under a President McCain, it would have been 7-2 the other way.
Yeah, yeah.
Or more.
Well, there wouldn't have been an Obamacare with President McCain. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing we need to remember.
President Romney would have continued President McCain's...
resistance to nationalizing any form of health insurance relief for average people. Yeah, and this was a compromise, and we need single payer, and you know, I can sing that song for an entire podcast if anyone wants me to. But these two things were a victory.
They were.
And
they were.
And you know what I want, Driftglass? I want 8 more years of a Democratic administration.
Me too.
To stack the court.
Me too.
But what I'd like is to replace all of the swing and conservative judges except for Scalia.
Yeah.
So that every single ruling is 8-1.
7-2, because Clarence Thomas.
Well, isn't he kind of Scalia's clone?
That's the point. I just want to see a whole bunch of decisions that are just ditto marks down the
page. Ditto.
Just a bunch of ditto marks.
Well, what I was thinking was 8-1, because that outnumbers Scalia, makes Scalia be the lone person.
Yeah.
And then let his just the dissents, just let the dissents ring.
Yeah.
And have Elena Kagan, you know, read the majority decision and then flip it over and say, all right, Antonin, fuck me in the ass. Go ahead. Yeah. Let's hear it.
Or
he can just, you know, blow his top with every decision.
Stephen Colbert would have a segment on his new show, just slow jamming the Scalia decision.
When he's in the minority, it's funny.
It's when Crazy Uncle Liberty is in the minority, it's hilarious.
Yeah. It's losing big every time.
It's watching back to back, you know, Simpsons and all of the Family episodes. It's funny. It's a comedy when they run things. And this is something that President Obama did this week that was just pure drift class. Pardon my patting on the back. But he went there. He had a speech in Wisconsin, La Crosse, I think. I might be wrong about that, but I think that's where he was. And essentially said, you know, I love these guys. I know them.
Republicans. He was talking about Republicans.
I know them. A lot of them are really good guys, but their ideas are just terrible. Their ideas are bad. And he said, you know who, because we're one big American family. We're one united family. You know, we're all in this together. He said, but you know, Thanksgiving, there's always Uncle Harry. And he's talking about Crazy Uncle Liberty. He said, you know, and who says just crazy shit. And you have to correct him. You know, but Uncle Harry, that's just nuts. That's just wrong. And you love him, but you can't let him be in charge of anything. And that's the point. The point is not that these people exist, because they do and they will and they always shall. The point is that one of our two political parties uses them as an engine to run on. And that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing that the last vestiges of the fig leaf that they have used to cover up who really, really is the leering, insane heart of their party, just gone. And what it looks like when when they lose, when they get boiling angry mad and they lose, it looks on the courts, it looks like Antonin Scalia.
Yeah.
And on the presidential stage, on the political stage, this is why Donald Trump is doing really well.
Yeah, yeah. And before we get to that, I want to make sure we don't forget the other thing that happened on Friday.
Yeah.
The funeral for Reverend Pinckney. I was so grateful to have a chance to watch at least 2 hours of the funeral before Obama came on. As I said on Twitter, you know who's got a deep bench? It's not the Republican Party. The Black Church in South Carolina has a deep bench.
Yes, they do.
Of really talented, committed Christians who speak with great power about justice and honor. And it was very healing for me to see that funeral. And I know that's what funerals are for.
Exactly.
And watching the speech again that night, and, you know, Rachel Maddow ran it uninterrupted. And Junior Dude was there. And he got upset again because I started to cry again during Obama's speech and singing Amazing Grace with the president on our TV, singing Amazing Grace. And you turned to Junior Dude and said, oh, it's okay. People cry at funerals.
They do.
And that's a healthy thing, is to cry at a funeral. His speech was transformative, but the whole thing was transformative. And I got 4 or 5 emails from people saying, you know, I'm a crusty old atheist, but I got to say, hearing the president speak at that time in that way made me realize that I may never abandon the flying spaghetti monster, but I have to admit grace is present.
Yeah.
And I'm never trying to, you have to understand, it really is against my religion to convert anybody to my way of thinking.
No.
It really is. I'm not interested in doing that because I believe in an omnipotent God who may have a completely different plan for everybody apart from me. And I fully acknowledge that perhaps my religion is simply a crutch. And hey, you know, if that's the case, then it works for me, you know, and whatever gets you through this life with less pain than life offers.
Well, and I recognize that, the people, you know? I know, people I respect, people mm-hmm. who haven't fundamentally changed in a lot of ways, have had an ineffable experience.
Mm-hmm.
You can't quantify, you can't reproduce in a lab, but have changed them.
Yeah.
And they have become better, nicer, more open people. And I can't point to the actual, you know, petri dish where this took place, but I can see the results of it.
Yep.
And it is, I was thinking the other day, other than really the Kennedy funeral, and maybe the aftermath of the Challenger and the aftermath of the Oklahoma City bombing, national mourning is not something we do very often. National bitching we do every day. Mm-hmm. But the idea that, you know, we should all sort of calm down and go on to church time, which is different than normal time. One of the things I do like about church, the physical structure and going there, is that you're in a different pace. You calm mm-hmm. down. Mm-hmm. The sort of bang, 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 everyday thoughts of what's going on in the world just sort of, okay, for an hour or two, we're going to move at a slower, more deliberate, more mm-hmm. sort of ancient pace. Mm-hmm. And then you can go back and, you know, worry about changing your oil and you're going to get meds straightened out and so forth. But for this brief period of time, this meditative period, we're going to talk about...
We're going to stop. Yeah.
Stop, and we're going to talk about morality. We're going to talk about how we should behave in the world as decent.
And how we can make the world a better place. Yeah. And how can we focus on something other than our own micro world.
And that's what...
And move to the macro world of what God wants us to do.
And that's what the funeral, that funeral reminded me of. There was a lot more eternal verity, more mm-hmm. ancient truth and more deep humanity going on in that place.
Yep.
Than most people see, in a month of Sundays, as the saying goes.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was, to quote my, former grandmother-in-law, Chuch.
Church.
This wasn't church. This was church.
Mm-hmm.
And we all went to church with Barack Obama.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was quite a wonderful experience on the heels of a really awful thing. But it was amazing. It was quite amazing.
And on the heels of that, now we've had these church burnings. And I don't want to leave this podcast without talking about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there does seem to be a trend. And that's very frightening. I hope that I want to pray for the people who are investigating these crimes.
Yeah.
And let them follow their training and be clear about, you know, keeping their eyes on the prize of finding out who did this in the cases where it's arson
mm-hmm.
and investigating it. If it's not arson, finding out how it happened.
Right.
Find the truth. That's what we're after.
That's all anybody wants.
And I'm also sharing the concern of some law enforcement officials that are worried about copycat crimes because that makes it hard to see the truth in terms of whether it's a conspiracy or not. Some kid sees it on the TV and decides it's cool to do this.
Right.
Or some old guy decides it's cool to do this. It doesn't have to be a kid. Makes a copycat crime. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a big Klan meeting or an internet meeting from the Klan saying go out and burn churches necessarily. It's just a copycat crime, and it's hard to then figure out where the conspiracy is, to find the real conspiracy. So I just, you know, if you're a praying person, pray for those people that are investigating these, that they maintain honesty and find the truth
mm-hmm.
and hopefully stop it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing, is stop it. But both of these things, the Obama speech and the church burnings, I think are all bringing us back to a sense of not just the Black community, but community, mm-hmm. and how we must defend society. There has been, since Reagan, this whole, the Reagan myth is falling down.
Yes, it is.
Economically, and the belief, the Thatcher-Reagan belief that there is no society, there's just individuals, and right. Ayn Rand, and we're all in it on our own, everyone's an island. You know, that is collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are really mad about that because
yeah. Well, they want the world to be a John Wayne movie.
Yep.
They want to live
and they want to be the hero of the John Wayne movie. Yeah. Yeah.
And they want villains. They want the way they keep their mind asleep, the way they stay unconscious mm-hmm. is by buying into a very simplistic Manichaean worldview where they are the heroes. Mm-hmm. And you and me, Blue Gal, are the villains.
Yeah.
And yep. as are uppity women and people of color.
Well, and that's why Hannity has an audience.
Yeah.
You know, he preaches that from his desk. So.
And it's falling apart. It cannot sustain
itself. It's falling apart. It yeah. cannot, from its own weight. And so I want to transition from this conversation to civil disobedience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bree Newsom's very brave act of taking down the South Carolina Confederate flag herself.
She and her partner.
Yeah.
If you will.
I watched a couple of interviews with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that their attorney is a South Carolina state senator. Is that right?
I believe I caught both of them and I believe it was a South Carolina state representative or state senator who's also an attorney, mm-hmm. Who's also representing them. And on the, I think it was the Chris Hayes show tonight, just very briefly in passing, a blurred past, who was making the point that, first of all, it's going to be real weird to be, they didn't deface anything.
Yeah.
They brought the flag down.
The flag down in one piece. Yeah. They didn't put a lighter on it. Yeah.
And secondly,
she put her hands up immediately.
Yeah. And secondly, it's going to be very strange trying to try them for something that will stop being a crime shortly once the state votes, yeah, this sucked. This should never have been in the first place.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to vote that it should never have been in the first place. They're going to vote to take it down.
Right.
Yeah.
But the idea that we're going to fine you or put you in jail for doing that which we voted should be done mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit ahead of us.
They're going to do what they do to a lot of people who perform civil disobedience. There'll be a fine. There'll be some, you know, and there has been fundraising for her bail, uh-huh. which is awesome. And her court costs, and that's awesome.
Yep.
I just want to temper the folks that I've seen on Twitter getting a little bit bent about.
Oh, good luck with that
treatment.
Yeah, Blue Gal tempers Twitter. Yeah,
Phil. Twitter. Yeah, right. There you go. Yeah. there's our title for this week. But, you know, the consequences of civil disobedience are you get arrested and you get in trouble, and that's the point.
Yeah.
And the point is to put the system on trial.
Right. This is not Martin Luther King did not write notes from a Birmingham Motel 6.
Right. was in jail.
He's in jail. And it was on purpose. And it was the whole point was, look, this is an unjust law. This is a ludicrous, unjust law. Mm-hmm. And we're going to break it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That's the disobedience part. Mm-hmm. And we're going to break it in a peaceful, nonviolent way. That's the civil part.
Mm-hmm.
And you can expect to go to jail. The whole idea behind Gandhi and behind Martin Luther King in a lot of cases was to overflow the jails.
Yeah.
Was show that all these well-dressed, church-going, God-loving, decent people.
And children.
And children were being thrown in jail or being fire-hosed or dogs mm-hmm. were being set on them simply for the act of wanting to vote.
Yep.
Or wanting to be treated like a decent human being. That's
and I told
point.
You the story of the Jew lawyer who was in one southern town. Yeah. I think I found out about this at the Birmingham Civil Rights Museum,
uh-huh.
which, by the way, if you go to that museum in Birmingham, Alabama, it's an amazing museum. I highly recommend go to Birmingham and see the Civil Rights Museum. You go through it. It's not a guided tour, but you walk it's very organized in that you walk through it and see the history of the civil rights movement. And when you get to the end of the trail, there is this circular window that looks out on the 16th Street Baptist Church, the Baptist Church where the four little girls were killed by a bomb. That church is at the end of that trail, and you see it out the window, the actual church. So,
and your choice of Jewish and lawyer was not accidental.
The Jew lawyer.
It was quite deliberate. That was the
quite point. Deliberate. The Jew lawyer who stood up on a box as African-American civil disobedient people were being arrested.
Who did Southern crackers hate as much as the black?
Jew lawyers.
Especially lawyers from the
Yankee
door.
Yankee Jew lawyers who came outside agitators.
Maybe papists.
That's what they were.
Somewhere, but yeah.
I got your outside agitator right here.
I got it right here. I got a law degree too. So yeah, you were saying he stood up on a box.
Yeah. And after the civil rights, you know, bills passed, they all got jobs at Brandeis University where I went to school. So just saying. The lawyers stood up on a box. This one lawyer stood up on a box and said, count. Yeah. He was like, I'm going to count every single person that you bring into this jail, and I'm going to have an accurate count of the number of people you arrest. And nothing made that sheriff more angry.
Right.
Because he had a pickup truck out back for the uppity ones, yes, you know, to put him in a lake.
Yeah, you know he did. And the idea that there's this outside Jew agitator with some goddamn Northern law degree, Yankee law
outside
degree.
Outside agitator coming in and deciding that he's going to hold me accountable to the law.
Who the hell do you think you are? Well, I believe I'm the eyes and ears of the country at the moment, sir. And I'm here to basically fuck with you by counting.
Yep.
By simply holding you accountable,
counting the people
as a public servant for the people you are arresting. That's all I'm here to do.
The citizens you are arresting.
Yep. And so that's where...
Which turns it on its head.
Yeah.
That just turns it on its head. All of a sudden, they are citizens and human beings with civil rights, simply because I've counted them as people.
Mm-hmm.
Contrasting Bree Newsom, and I kind of hate to do this, but I think we need to do it.
Uh-huh.
Genesette Gutierrez, who is the trans woman who heckled Obama.
Uh-huh.
I heard an interview with her today. One of my friends on Facebook was very upset because the liberal media, he felt, ignored her issue in defending Obama from heckling.
Goddamn liberal media. Yeah, if you can find them, okay, that's great. Yeah.
And I said to my friend on Facebook, I said, you know, I'm really sorry that we are reduced to team sport in politics today.
Yeah.
You know, that we can't just have ideas flow freely, that it's red and blue, and that's stupid. But, you know, she heckled our president. She heckled a president who was at a really high point in his presidency, let's face it. And listening to this interview, she went on Fox News Latino to talk about how mad she was at the LGBT community for betraying her because her issue. I listened to this interview, and this is quite literally what she said. Her issue is that Obama should release from ICE GLBT people, not all people. Not reform, general reform for all people held, you know, all children held in
immigration
detentions, immigration detention centers.
Uh-huh.
But she's specifically arguing that her people should be released, and she went on Fox to bitch about Obama.
Well,
and at that point, I'm done.
There will always be an open door on Fox for
someone to bitch about Obama.
Even the liberal, insert name here, finds Obama to be a horrible disappointment.
Even this transgendered woman, Hispanic immigration activist, hates President Obama.
Can't you
understand? He's the worst president in history. Yeah.
See, it's... And
I hate that politics is this way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this way because of Fox.
It is.
and you side with that, and I'm done.
First of all, you can't debate the issue. You have to make it personal, and as long as that's the case, then that's the way I'm going to come out. That's the way I'm going to fight. I will go after your personality, after you as a person, and the issues you support. So the minute Fox News, Roger Ailes wants to disarm and talk about public policy and the role of government, I will lay my arms down. You will not hear another word from me about the fact.
Well, and you are seeing cooperation among both sides of the aisle on prison reform.
Yes, I'm
impressed with that.
Yes, you are. And there's some movement on marijuana reform. And by the way, I hate to point this out, and this really is where there's a difference between liberals and Democrats. One is a subset of the other and often at odds with the other, but we generally end up on the same side. Marriage equality, decriminalizing or legalizing pot, and prison reform are liberal issues. liberal issues. And it is delightful that so many people are finally coming around to where we have been for a very, very, very long time. But and this is where I will – the one and only time I'm going to give props to Andrew Sullivan, who's been on the right side of marriage equality for 30 years. 30 years. And he reopened his blog for one new post celebrating marriage equality. And without any irony or any contempt or any snarkiness, I'm very happy that his issue is finally settled and that he and his partner can go anywhere in this country and be recognized as a married couple anywhere they go, period. But it is folly to pretend that these issues are somehow conservative issues that have been in hiding somehow behind the bushes for a while. And thank goodness they finally come out. No, it's just that liberals don't have any power.
Yeah.
We're on the right. This is I'm getting a little bit ahead of us, but this is Bernie Sanders' whole point. The whole raison d'etre of his campaign is, look, I've been on the side of these issues for 40 years.
Yeah.
Since the 60s. And so it's a great and good thing. And I would love to have the debates over policy. And when that day comes, I'll be that guy. But for now, we don't have debates over policy. We still have debates over whether Barack Obama is a secret communist or a Kenyan secret communist.
Yeah. And I did want everybody who said that Obama is a secret Muslim to be in the Clockwork Orange chair watching his speech, his eulogy, because, you know, and as you say, maybe he's just trained to look Christian.
I mean, it's like you've never seen the Manchurian candidate, honey.
Yeah.
You know, he's been trained since birth to give this one speech that will make him the
This is the thing with marriage equality, too, which is, you know, 3 or 4 years from now. When it's obvious that it really hasn't changed anything for anyone except gay and lesbian people, and maybe brought a little more money to florists and bakers and wedding planners, the idea that right now there's this segment of the population that thinks this is a death panel.
Right.
And it'll just fall down the memory hole.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
You segued beautifully there.
I segued beautifully into the quote of the week, which you're going to talk about.
Yes, I am. So Newt Gingrich is one of those people who has absolute immunity from prosecution. He can say anything. He can do anything. He can shit himself in public. It doesn't matter. He will always be welcome back on Meet the Press. Even though he's now a CNN employee, he can now come on pretty much any show he wants, say whatever the fuck he wants. Nobody asks him any questions. Nobody presses him on the fact that what he's saying is insane. It's one of those barometers of how completely bent our media is that Newt Gingrich continues to exist. So last week, while everyone was focusing on Bobby Jindal and his just abysmal performance and the fact that Scalia was erupting all over himself and the Republican Party was going nuts trying to figure out how to cope with the fact that the public seems to have leapfrogged over them. And how do we – and so you had half the Republican Party go, just pretend it's not happening. Ignore it. Yeah, it's terrible, but let's move on. And the other half going, no, 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 no. let's elect Supreme Court justices. The Supreme Court justices are monsters. These unelected vicars of Obama, this Obama White House, this Obama Supreme Court. While the rest of us were just kind of laughing our asses off going, well, you know, welcome to 2000. This is what it's like to be on the bitter end of a Supreme Court decision. Now, it's weird that you can't seem to – it's weird not that there's no intellectual consistency on the right, that you're completely okay with Citizens United. You're completely okay with Bush v. Gore.
Yeah. Hobby Lobby. That, you're okay with Hobby Lobby.
That when Ted Cruz says that, you know, the Supreme Court has no business deciding marriage, blah, 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 none of the grovelers on Morning Joe – on MSNBC are going to mention Loving versus Virginia.
Yeah, to him
because it's too scary. It's too big of a pointy stick to be taken to Ted Cruz, who's protected and who's a pal, and we're not going to push him too hard because we want him back. So Newton Leroy Gingrich goes on Meet the Press, and it was if you have a memory of Newt Gingrich, you know that Newt Gingrich has spent his entire career playing the racist dog whistle like a fucking pipe organ. Mm-hmm. That's been his whole thing. Newt Gingrich pioneered hate speech with his GOPAC organization. He taught
it. Well, and he refined it to a level of teaching it to the class of 94 Republicans.
Through tapes.
As a lesson.
Here are words. Yeah. And literally down to lists of words you should say when you're on camera or on a microphone. Mm-hmm. And you have to repeat them. And it was very important. Repeat them over and over and over again because then they work. And he taught an entire generation of political Republicans how to hate people like you and me for a living. Mm-hmm. How to blame every single fucking problem in the world. This is a guy who blamed liberal morality for a woman drowning her children.
Yeah.
This is a guy who said, well, this is what happens when you vote Democratic. Mm-hmm. And was not run out of town on a fucking rail. Instead, they made him Speaker of the House. So Newt is an awful, awful person, a deeply depraved, immoral monster who, for some reason, is deferred to and invited on talk shows. And therein, then that's where the fun starts, because then he says things that are just quite remarkable. So Newt Gingrich, his entire career rests on people in the media deliberately not remembering what Newt Gingrich said last week. It's vitally important on these shows. And I wrote a whole series of posts called the Gingrich Rules. There's a rule on talk shows that Newt Gingrich goes out in public and says something vile and racist and insane and inflammatory, and then goes on Meet the Press back when David Gregory was running the show. And David Gregory essentially rehabilitates Newt right on the spot. And the deal is, and we'll never fucking ask him about the shit he just said. And that's why David Gregory was a whore. Because mm-hmm. David Gregory would absolutely refuse to ask these raving fascist lunatics a single fucking question about the shit they had just said last week. Instead, we'll invite him on our show, we'll loan him the credibility of Meet the Press, rehabilitate his reputation as a jocular, kind of funny, interesting guy, and then turn him back on the public where he can cash in on that, the rehabilitation we just offered him. So Gingrich is on the show, and he's talking about the flag, and he's talking about, I'm going to give you a direct quote. Now, I think that may well be changing now about the flag, now that the people are into a new cycle, whatever the hell that means. Yeah. But let me tell you what I think is crazy. And then he pulls out this example of some Amazon video that has a picture of a Confederate flag and a U.S. flag on it. And
it's a Civil War history.
Civil War history.
Right.
And that Amazon has taken it, and it's been taken off of Amazon because of the presence of the Confederate flag. Now, he had to dig way, way, way down to find an example that stupid, you know, where some third-tier manager decided, oh, it has a Confederate flag on it, we're going to block it, if that even exists, if that even really happened. I'm not sure it even really happened. But it was mm-hmm. some fluke in the system, right? It has nothing to do with the actual conversation at hand, which is the American swastika, which has flown in your state, Newt, and a bunch of others, is a symbol of oppression and hatred and terror, and it should never have been allowed to go back up. And you have been playing on racism and hatred and divisiveness your entire fucking career. Mm-hmm. That's what the conversation we should have and could have had. But instead, it's about this decision Amazon made for one video that they thought shouldn't be promoted. So he says, now there's a point here, however, we begin to get towards Orwell's memory hole in which we try to hide from the past. I think it's one thing to say you should not have a symbol, which is very offensive to a large part of your population. It's another thing to say, let's erase our history and pretend it never occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Newt Gingrich's mm-hmm. entire career consists
like your first two wives,
yeah, like the shit that never happened,
and your 6-year mistress, mm-hmm. who you're now married to. Yeah, okay. All those blowjobs you got in your car.
Conducting an impeachment hearing over a blowjob while you were getting a blowjob from
blowjob
your mistress
in your car in front of your kids' school. Yeah, okay.
This is the dishonor among thieves. The honor among thieves. It's Newt can get on the show and say, look, I know that my entire career depends on everyone at this table agreeing, not to mention the crazy shit I said last week. But let's talk about Orwell's memory hole and how it's just nutty, how we just – it's a terrible thing to forget our own past. And not just Gingrich. The entire Republican Party is based on a collusion, is based on a conspiracy not to fucking talk about what we did last week or last month or last year. And that's why when anyone does, everyone gets very quiet. And everyone sort of edges around the subject and moves on to the next thing, because we're not allowed to talk about the fact that one of our two major political parties is insane. Mm-hmm. So when Gingrich mm-hmm. actually invokes Orwell's memory hole by name, mm-hmm. and everyone just sort of quietly backs off, doesn't mention anything, and we move on to the next subject, it was hilarious. It was...
Well, and let's be clear, too, that the media being in service to capitalism rather than truth... Mm-hmm. is a feature, not a bug.
It's what it does.
So Newt Gingrich speaks in complete sentences and sound bites and makes room for the commercial to come on mm-hmm. and appeases that side so that they won't be mad at the commercial that comes on because their side got airtime.
Their guy was there.
Yeah. So I've been trying to figure out this week, and I'm not trying to make this a religious show, but in my prayer life, I've been praying for Chuck Todd to not allow himself to be abused like this and be lied to all the time.
Yeah.
And as I was sitting there meditating on this, or however you want to say it, I realized, no, look, this is a feature, not a bug. This is not a problem for him. It's his job.
Right.
And the entire for-profit corporate media structure mm-hmm. is set up to sell Chobani yogurt.
Yeah. Yes.
That's why. And I had an exchange with Sparkle Pony on Twitter about this.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that and some people were way out ahead. Some corporations were way out ahead of everybody else
yep.
on gay rights. Yep. American Airlines deserves big props. They had a gay travel division with rainbows and with advertising and so forth years ago, a decade ago. Some corporations have been way out ahead on non-discriminatory hiring mm-hmm. of gays and lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
And they're to be applauded for that. But seeing all of the Twitter icons for all of the – for Coke and Pepsi
right.
and yogurt and AT&T
yep.
and everybody go rainbow
uh-huh.
And get on – join this parade because we're all in the parade now,
uh-huh.
you know. It made me think, you know, there's money to be made.
Yeah.
And so is that why – civil rights for gays happened so quickly? Is that one of the reasons?
Mm-hmm.
And why civil rights for poor people is so hard?
Yep.
Yep. And Sparkle Pony said, so what you're saying is Ruth Bader Ginsburg was just working for Chobani yogurt. I said, no. I'm not saying that.
But money moves mountains.
And particularly now...
Mm-hmm.
We've said many times my quote of, you know, when money is speech, money becomes the only speech. Money was speech
yep.
in this, and money is speech with people running away from Donald Trump.
Money is speech. Money, it costs you money to have a Confederate flag on your shelf.
Right.
Therefore, Walmart,
right.
no more Confederate flags.
Right,
exactly. It will get you money to have a rainbow on your logo.
Okay.
Therefore, Giovanni Yogurt has a rainbow. It's fine. Whatever you want. Whatever you want.
Right.
This is not about ideology at all at that level. This is about profit. And who and you're scaring
everybody understands
away.
That color green. You know, that color green is awesome. Mm-hmm. So,
well, if you go back to Mad Men, trying to get into the Negro markets.
Yeah.
And you can bring all of your research and they buy televisions. And they buy your television. They buy these televisions, and you should really focus on them. And the owners of the company, the bitter old white racists, want no part of it.
Stormed out of there. Yeah.
And the
left all that money on the table, as they said.
And Pete, who is a just amoral calculating machine, can't understand.
Yeah, so look, if you put a TV ad in Jet Magazine, you'll increase your sales massively.
Right. And he doesn't understand, because he has really no morals at all except money.
No.
Why wouldn't you do this? And he runs...
That's money. It's money. That's why they call it money.
And he runs smack up against the fact that the owners, the sponsors, want no part of it. And that's it's a very telling point that poor people still have no clout because there's no money to be made off of poor people.
Right.
But everybody has a gay friend
or a gay son
grandson.
Yeah,
and it's not, even if it's an issue, it's not really an issue because it's we can go with that. Yeah, we can do that. And so it is a sad but true feature of the free market that. And actually, Chuck Todd let on to something like this when he was very excited that he can talk about the Confederate flag, because it's not just some people. Most people think this is a bad idea.
Both sides
so now,
want the Confederate flag down.
Now
right,
that it's become
right.
a majority of people who watch our show and buy our toilet paper and penis cream and defense contracting and Navy ads. Now that most of those people are cool with this, I can get on board with it, too. He admitted as much during that interview that we ran a few weeks ago. He's an employee. Yeah. He works for a show business. He works for ratings. And he is essentially – the parameters in which he's allowed to operate are dictated by the corporate suite. And so it should come as a surprise to no one that your particular issue or your particular sense of outrage that Newt Gingrich keeps getting on television is not, they don't care about that at all. It does not enter into that.
Well, and that's why I want to finish up our podcast with Donald Trump.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well,
and the abandonment of Donald Trump by corporations, but the embrace of Donald Trump by the National Review Online made you laugh.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And your post today was so good about this. Go ahead and talk about the National Review and Donald Trump.
Well,
and
it was Jonathan Chait, who's writing out of the New York Magazine. Jonathan Chait is, a well-paid, serious person who leans slightly to the left on most days. But it is apparently vexing and confusing to people who live inside the Beltway media bubble. By Beltway, I mean Washington and New York and the whole media sprawl, the whole East Coast media elite, that Donald Trump is doing as well as he's doing. And if you don't live inside the bubble, if you live outside of the Schwarzschild radius, if you live outside of the black hole zone, the area beyond which there's no escape from a black hole. It's perfectly obvious why Donald Trump is doing great, as well as he's doing. I don't think he's going to be the candidate. I don't think the billionaires who own the GOP would allow that. But it's perfectly obvious that Donald Trump is the GOP. He's loud. He's completely fucking ignorant. He's a racist, and he's completely impervious to facts.
He's the perfect Fox News reflection.
He is. He is what the conservative id looks like, and he has money. Now, no one knows how much. He might be broke. He might be a billionaire. I don't know. I don't really care. But
well, see, that to me, I'm going to interrupt you there. That is the answer. I hate to give Reince Priebus any hints as to how to deal with Donald Trump, but that's how you do it. You say, okay, you want to be on the debate stage? We need 3 years of tax returns. You got to release them to the public now.
And now he's done.
And then that separates people who really want to be president of the United States from people that are running for some other reason.
Yeah. And the reason that Donald Trump is doing well is because Crazy Uncle Liberty, he sounds just like Crazy Uncle Liberty.
He does.
Exactly like him. And this is this is the part, this is the really, really ugly part of American politics that our media would rather chew its own arm off than talk about.
Yep.
Which is the Republican Party has spent a lot of money, billions of dollars over 30, 40 years to create, to nurture, to cultivate, to mutate, to grow a base that looks and sounds like Donald Trump, except they have no money. Yep. And so when Donald Trump comes along and says, I'm you, yeah, vote for me. Of course they respond to him. They built a base of chumps and suckers and bigots and idiots on purpose for specifically so they could win an election. So when Donald Trump comes along and essentially reflects back to them exactly who they are, he does really well with them. Surprise, surprise. But if you live inside the bubble, you can't admit that. It's verboten. You are not allowed to admit that the Republican Party is out of its fucking tree. So this is where Jonathan Chait gets very confused. Why? He's not confused that Donald Trump would be running ahead. He's confused that serious conservatives would come to his defense. And this is the quote that just made me laugh when I read it, because it sums up how completely fucked up the media is. As Jonathan Chait says, and it's not just bottom-feeding outlets like the Daily Caller or Breitbart either.
Okay, to his credit, he admits that Breitbart
and the Daily
is a bottom-feeder.
Okay. And that's not
good for
exactly
him.
Controversial, except, of course, we have a guy running for Congress in our immediate backyard who is directly from that organization.
Yep.
So
he's running for Congress, people.
And the reason Breitbart.com and BigGovernment.com exists is because the GOP has built this dumb fuck, racist, fact-proof base. They're willing to take this shit, who believe every goddamn thing that comes out of the Breitbart world, who can believe every goddamn thing that comes out of Fox News. So they're not bottom feeders. They're just feeders. They're just the people who come along and take the chumps money. Just like the system is set up to do. So Jonathan Chait says, it's not just bottom feeders like that. National Review editor Rich Lowry writes in Politico.
And that's not a punchline.
He said, no, serious people like Rich Lowry writing
in
a
Politico.
Serious journal like Politico. Oh, man, do you realize how fucking...
That's a knee slapper. That's a knee slapper.
But
right
it explains why things are broken. Because Jonathan Chait thinks Politico is a serious work of to be taken seriously, and Rich Lowry is somehow
he's a thinker. He's an intellectual.
He's the editor in chief or whatever, he's managing editor of America's White Supremacist Journal of Record. Say that not just because it's true, but because in the past he's had to fire out and out white supremacist propagandists from his news, and he fired one guy. And said, oh, it's horrible. This guy showed up. I don't know how he slipped through our very careful vetting process. He's been in with our paper for 10 years. And then like 2 months later, he had to fire somebody else. You know why? Because you attract people like that, Rich Lowry, because you're a scummy, awful person. You are a bottom-feeding scumbag. But Rich Lowry gets invited to write for Politico. He gets invited on Meet the Press, and therefore in Jonathan Chait's constellation.
Because he speaks in sound bites and wears a suit and looks the part. Right. And therefore, the commercial for Viagra that comes on afterwards, it's seamless, okay?
But in Jonathan Chait's universe, that makes you a serious person.
Yeah.
Because, you've been given the mantle of seriousness by American capitalism.
Well, and it's a circle jerk, too. Yeah. Because Rich Lowry then can come back and say, Jonathan Chait says blah, 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 and and we're having a serious intellectual discussion when actually it's just jerking each other off.
And this is...
Driftglass, we got to stop. I'm sorry. We're at an hour and a half tape.
This is insane.
I'm sorry. This is insane, and we'll be back next week to talk more about insanity. I have clothes on right now, and I think you do too. Even though we are kid-free this week.
I know. It's amazing.
We launched them last... We launched them yesterday, actually.
Well, you did. It was a very, very complicated date.
It was, because you had a lot to do and you couldn't go with us. And then I lost the car in the parking lot.
You did.
Which is bad. Mm-hmm. But the way things were in the parking lot was confusing to me. And some very nice people helped me find my car in the garage.
Well, let me tell you three issues that we're going to have to talk about next week then. Okay. Overtime pay.
Yes.
Rand Paul helpfully reminding America that Cliven Bundy is still real.
Well, I want to talk about that right now, because he apparently had a private meeting with Cliven Bundy, and then it trended on Twitter. And I don't think it's private anymore if it trends on Twitter.
No, but it's you know, really? Really? Of all the gin joints and all the racists and all the towns and all the world, you decided to hook up with Cliven Bundy.
Well, and I liked what Chris Hardwick said this week on At Midnight when he said, you know, and he was talking about Donald Trump, but this fits for Cliven Bundy too, that when someone says, I have a thing or two to tell you about the Mexicans, that's the point at which you just stop listening to them.
Safely stop listening, pretty much at that.
Same with Cliven Bundy.
But we should go into that a little bit further, because Rand Paul running...
Well, and Rand Paul is running again, yes, running away from
things. That's my meme, and I own that one, so...
You do.
Rand Paul running away. So I'm not sure what he's running away from now, other than, you know, 200 years of American history. But we didn't talk this week about David Brooks and his advice to conservative Christians. Now that he is...
To become liberal Christians, which is basically what it was. Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
David Brooks is Dr. Faust, and he's trying to renegotiate.
He's trying to renegotiate the Faust contract.
He really doesn't want to talk about...
The Faustian bargain. Yeah. He doesn't want to talk about that at all.
No, I've gotten everything I want. I'd really like to conservatives to stop behaving like reckless assholes. Yeah, well, that's good luck with that. But we'll talk about that next week. And
we'll talk. I'm sure David Brooks will shit in the hole once again.
Yeah. Well, he's got a column tonight, so I anxiously await what he has to say about America and Christianity and freedom.
Drift Class, I got to tell you something. I listened to Bernie Sanders' speech. We're not going to get out of this podcast without talking about Bernie Sanders' speech before 10,000 people on July 1st, the year before the election, in Madison, Wisconsin. And you really ought to listen to the last 10 minutes of his speech, because he speaks to Republicans. Mm-hmm. He addresses Republicans, and he addresses them with respect. And he says, essentially, if we want a revolution in this country, we have got to get he said specifically, I'm not talking about media Republicans. I'm not talking about congressional Republicans. I'm talking about people on the ground. We've got to get them to stop voting against their own interests.
I couldn't agree more.
And if you can lay out in a really clear way in the general election, I agree with you about the primaries. If you can lay out in the general election, voting Republican means your son goes to war, your dad's Social Security is cut, and your retirement is delayed. Mm-hmm. That's what they want. And then you can prove it. There's the tape is out there of these candidates saying exactly that now.
Okay.
Don't let there be an etch-a-sketch. Run the tape. Run it over and over again.
I couldn't agree more.
I'm going to make those commercials.
And if there are 45% of the voters of the country, that will have no effect on whatsoever. At all. There's no...
But that's only 45. Right. And they need 51.
I agree.
and they start out with an electoral deficit.
I know. All they need is 51 votes in the Senate.
Yeah, and then they can stop
everything. They can stop everything. They need the House or 51 votes. That's all they need. They don't need to be president.
And Kristen Gillibrand would not tell John Stewart this week who was blocking her bill.
So back to my Obamacare thing, which is what you wanted me to talk about, as I recall. We wandered far afield. Let me explain very...
That's okay. People are doing their laundry while we're talking. And dishes and cooking Friday night, you know.
Who,
and we love you
we
guys.
Do. So who lost Iraq, Blue Gal? I'm not talking about play the tape.
Barack
I'm not talking
Obama
about facts
Iraq.
Because you're thinking like a liberal, where those things matter. I'm talking about think like a Republican.
Well, I think we're talking primary versus general election.
I don't know.
If
Candy Crowley hadn't said, this is what the record says, Mitt Romney would have gotten away with it. You know, the same corporate media that was perfectly willing to pave the road.
But he was stupid enough to ask her.
Right.
He asked her the question.
He did. But Mitt, too, whoever that is, won't make that mistake.
No, I know.
And so you're talking about a corporate media that's perfectly happy to pave the road for any right-wing conservative to go anywhere they want. We'll never ask them a hard question. You can go to all the Bernie Sanders rallies you want, but when you get to talking to the entire public Ain't nobody going to risk their job to play a tape proving your point. That's not going to happen. So who lost Iraq? Barack Obama did. You know what? The Republicans had a health care plan, Blue Gal. We had one. It was going to solve all of our problems and make everything great. And you know what happened? Barack Obama rammed his through and got his...
Shoved it down our throats.
What? Rammed it down our throats.
Shoved it down our throats.
And his his unelected lawyers on the Supreme Court have locked it in place. So we're stuck with this horrible health care bill instead of the responsible, market-friendly freedom agenda. Republican health care plan, which we could have had if only Barack Obama hadn't lost Iraq. That for me, that is my prediction. The next iteration of Obamacare is it will be used as a weapon. We could have won, but they took it away from us. They stabbed us in the back. And that.
Okay. But I'm on the other side of that. I'm just going to debate you a little bit. Even though we're going very long with this podcast, I don't care.
I don't care.
There is a story up at Crooks and Liars tonight. Barack Obama did speak in Wisconsin.
He did.
And there were some people outside the hall where he was speaking, or the arena where he was speaking, waving Confederate flags around. And, you know, waving Confederate flags around. They went up to interview the Confederate flag-waving people outside of the Barack Obama speech and asked them about their feelings about Obama. And, of course, the first thing they said is, this is not a hate demonstration. This is Southern pride.
In Wisconsin.
Okay. In Wisconsin. Yeah. Madison. Right outside Madison. They interviewed him. They interviewed these guys. We have to keep God alive in our country, you know, so on and so forth. Okay. Then they asked him how he feels personally about Barack Obama. They're trying to get a, you know, a racist quote out of these people. And this man said, personally, I would love to meet the man. I would love to shake his hand and say hi and tell him thank you for the Obamacare because it allowed me to get back surgery. And it helped me out a lot, and it helped my family out a lot. If the man would shake my hand on national TV with me wearing this Confederate flag shirt, he just does not know how many Southerners would start to smile at him again. I found that very interesting. I mean, the Confederate flag asshole got back surgery. That's real.
It is.
Obamacare is helping real people.
Yes, it is.
And I think changing hearts and minds because of that. It's showing government can do something. All right. I don't win that battle with you because you're I don't think that you are stretching anyone's imagination by saying what the talking heads on Fox News are going to say about Iraq. I think that's exactly right. But
Every Republican candidate thus far in the last 2 weeks.
Weak leadership on the part of the president.
Failed president. Failed presidency. Completely fail. Weak leadership. Fail. And that is all the base wants to hear.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Andy. Andy's sitting on a John Deere tractor. He is a country warrior who stands up to hawks and owls and barn swallows in his pursuit of barn mice. His quote is, Andy says, a mouse carcass is a terrible thing to waste. I leave it as a present on the front porch for the lady of the house because I love my mommy.
That's very... John Deere tractor, come on.
He's sitting on a John Deere tractor. And
what's more American than that for the 4th of July?
For the 4th of July. And apparently he always leaves a little mouse carcass for mommy as often as he possibly can because that's such a nice present for mommy to get. So we welcome Andy to our Facebook page and website. Go check him out. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And we heard from a lot of you this week, and I'm really grateful for all those letters from fellow moms and fellow ADHD patients and people dealing with meds and giving us advice. And finding ways. We had one listener from Australia write us and offer to get us meds on his single payer plan and ship them to us.
Bless his
because
heart.
It would be cheaper.
I mean that literally. Bless his heart.
But it would be cheaper to get meds. We could fly to Australia and get a year's worth of meds, maybe. No, people are just wonderful, and thank you for that. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. And we have gotten several envelopes in the mail over the years that have Go Postal Unions written on the back.
Yeah,
and we got one today. So I wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
And from Ohio. So thank you, Ohio listener who wrote Go Postal Unions on the back of your envelope. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. We got a letter this week from John, among the many letters we got.
Yeah.
Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, thanks for a particularly powerful podcast this past Friday and for all the ones that preceded it. I wanted to send a donation there and then as I was listening, but I had to wait till the first when the paycheck came through. Oh, do we know what that's like? Whoa. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
We totally get it. Though it's often to be found only on the farthest flung margins of the media sphere, there's a lot of lefty media these days, and that's a great thing. But there isn't much out there that truly speaks to the concerns and the everyday lives and in the voices of working class people. The Professional Left podcast is a glorious exception to that rule. I hope that you know how very important that is and how very deeply appreciated. These stories need to be told. These arguments need to be made. These voices need to be heard. Please accept these few dollars as a deeply felt expression of gratitude. In solidarity, John. P.S. Clearly, no human being could possibly have absorbed and retained as much information about science fiction, or anything else for that matter, as Driftglass has. I eagerly await the shocking Science Fiction University reveal, wherein Driftglass comes out as a series T-11 Terminator sent from the future to destroy Skynet by out-arguing it. Thank you, John.
Yeah, I was sent by future president...
Sasha Obama.
Bernie Sanders. I'm here for Bernie Sanders in the future. He says, keep doing what I'm doing to destroy apps. I do a terrible Arnold impersonation.
I thought that was Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, no, that's how bad it is.
I thought you were doing Bernie Sanders, I swear to God.
Wow, that's an inspired thought. I would love to hear Bernie Sanders do Arnold Schwarzenegger.
All right. I'll be back.
Bernie Sanders, I've got your back.
That'd be good.
No, Bernie. That's free. It's free from you to me, man. From you to me.
Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the internet kitties think it's beautiful when Scalia is mad.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Happy 4th of July, everybody. Science Fiction University comes to us from Lawrence in Phoenix, who wanted to meet the challenge that you issued last week, Driftglass.
Meet the challenge, Lawrence. Come on now.
Revolution in science fiction.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of a cheat because revolution is pretty much the theme of all literature.
It's a major theme that can't miss. Yes.
Start with the Trojan Wars and work your way forward, and you'll find
it's an all-encompassing, the journey, the battle,
the hero.
Rebels, the hero. Right. Revolution is a big part of storytelling, so that's fine. But we Lauren sent us some, and I added a couple. We have six clips here from movies and TV, mostly movies. And you get to tell me what the movie or show is.
All right. Okay.
Let's see how we do. All right. Number one.
Is it any better world than it used to be? I rebel against this progress. What has this progress, this world civilization done to us? Machines and marvels. They've built these great cities of theirs, yes. They've prolonged life, yes. They've conquered nature, they say, and made a great white world. Is it any jollier than the world used to be in the good old days, when life was short and hot and merry and the devil took the hindmost?
All the same, what can we do about it?
Rebel. And rebel now. Now. Now is the time.
Why now in particular?
Why, because of this space gun business. Because of this project to shoot human beings at the stars.
That is either Metropolis or The Shape of Things to Come? Is that what it's
called? Things to Come. It's called Things to Come, 1936. That's right.
With young Abraham Lincoln.
Raymond Massey. Young Raymond Massey.
He plays like three different parts of that movie, right?
I think so. Well, yeah. He plays the dad who's going to send his kids off into space.
Yeah, but I think it's the history of mankind up until that point. Yeah. I think he plays a couple of different roles in the ages of men.
He plays Raymond Massey.
Yeah, he does. And this is great because they have, you know, lucite sandals and capes and, you know, but I got to say, for its time, the special effects were pretty impressive.
And the art direction is so bound to the late 30s.
Yeah,
I mean, it really it's is. All Art Deco and gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Very classic movie. Highly recommended if you haven't seen it. And this character is sort of the anti-revolutionary. You know, I want to revolt against all this progress. And he's also very Shakespearean in his diction. And it's a late 30s movie in that, you know, they have stationary cameras. So yeah. Everyone just kind of walks onto stage and gives their lines and then walks off. But beautiful, beautiful movie. Very like Metropolis, it's a gorgeous movie. Mm-hmm. Good to watch. Okay. Number two.
You have 1 minute and 23 seconds.
If change is inevitable, predictable, beneficial, doesn't logic demand that you be a part of it?
One man cannot summon the future.
But one man can change the present. Be the captain of this enterprise, Mr. Spock. Find a logical reason for sparing the Halkins and make it stick. Push till it gives. You can defend yourself better than any man in the fleet.
Captain, get in the chamber!
About it, Spock.
A man must also have the power.
In my cabin is a device that will make you invincible.
Indeed.
What will it be? Past or future? Tyranny or freedom? It's up to you.
It is time. In every revolution, there's one man with a vision. Captain Kirk, I shall consider it.
Oh, Spock with a beard, baby.
Spock with a beard.
Yeah, and we don't mean his wife, quote unquote.
We mean Spock with hair on his face. Yeah.
Yes.
Mirror.
That's the where they end up swapping places. Four members of the Intrepid Enterprise end up in a universe where the Federation is essentially a fascist. They're the Klingons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they conquer planets and they destroy things. And it's a very well done episode.
It is. And you pointed out to me when we saw it a while ago that the interesting part about how civilized people can pretend to be barbarians.
Right.
Not but barbarians get caught right away.
Right. So they can't stop being assholes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the one universal constant across all universes is logic, according to, you know, that is indefatigable. And this is one of those things that I think the first, the Star Trek reboot, J.J. Abrams, the Lens Flare trilogy, was fine. It was a good movie. I enjoyed it. The second one really did bite it.
Yeah. And they need to go back to some of these original series episodes and mine them.
This would be a really good one to mine.
This one would be awesome to go back and, you know, put a beard on. What's the guy who's playing Spock now?
Zach Quinto?
Yeah. Put a beard on him and just, you know, see where it goes. Because you could do a good script. I think you could do a good script with...
Well, and you know... Over in the other universe, there's a whole planet full of Vulcans.
That's right.
Vulcan has been wiped out.
You could bring some back. Yeah, there you go.
I don't think they're going to do it, but it's one of those ones that was, you know, very good.
All right, let's try number three.
Well, now, ain't this a surprise?
You played a very dangerous game.
Change always is.
Just how long do you think this peace is going to last?
As long as it can. What about the others?
What others?
The ones that want out.
Obviously, they will be freed.
I have your word.
What do you think I am? Human?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. One of your unfavorite movies.
Yeah. Well, it was such a giant... let down from the first movie. I mean, the when I was at art school, when I was working at art college and had a bunch of people who were sort of half a generation younger than me, but we understood each other really well. I introduced them to classic science fiction and other things, and they introduced me to music that I wasn't listening to currently. We had a wonderful time, a wonderful rapport, and The Matrix was our sort of touchstone.
Mm-hmm.
That was the holy God, look what they've done. Look at this amazing movie. This is awesome. And then they went and screwed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went and turned it into
And this is Matrix Revolutions. Yeah,
Matrix Revolutions. It's, I think, the best Matrix Revolutions was done by Will Ferrell as the architect. This is essentially, they had a character as the architect, as I recall, and the Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically fed a whole bunch of Illuminati, Masonic, alternate history of the Bible stuff into a word processor and had this guy spit out keywords from it. It was just bad. It was just and I appreciate the fact that the earth is hollow and full of attractive hippies, but I don't need that. You know, this is when it got indulgent. This is the George Lucas problem.
Yeah.
Which is where you really had to sort of stay tight and on budget, and things broke down and other people had to help you in the first movie, and then you got everything you wanted in the second
one. And then it was terrible.
So the third one, you know, kind of semi redeemed it, but it was, they should not have made, if you haven't seen the Animatrix, check that one out.
And Lawrence actually mentioned that in his email.
Yeah.
All right, number four.
I'll miss the sea. But a person needs new experiences. They jar something deep inside, allowing him to grow. Without change, something sleeps inside us and seldom awakens. The sleeper must awaken.
Everybody loves Dune.
I didn't love Dune.
No, even the crappy version. No, I really...
I don't... This movie, I went looking for... He didn't have enough clips for this one. And I don't know what happened, but I had to go look for a clip from Dune. And the dialogue in this movie is just awful.
Yeah. Oh, it's...
I'm sorry. It's just bad.
David Lynch
is somebody who I like to believe... I would understand as a human being eating the same thing every day for lunch.
And this was a big budget. It was cut way down. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was apparently a much, much longer movie that was just butchered. But it needed I forget which cable station did a miniseries of it. Mm-hmm. That was much better in every regard. It was much, because they just, you know, if you're a Dune fan, and I was, and I am. I like the book very much. I think it got a little bit let's pay for the farmish around book three.
Mm-hmm.
But Dune is a great book. Dune is one of the canonical works of science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it still holds up. But the whole, just when you see the still suit, right? The still suit is supposed to cover your entire body to absorb every drop of moisture you have so that you can recycle it and drink it because it's a desert planet. And when you see that still suits have no hood,
yeah.
Your face and your head is exposed. It was
And you're going to breathe out all this moisture every time you breathe.
Exactly. It was so, Jesus.
But, you know, you have to show Sting's hair.
I know you do. I know. It's very important.
Otherwise, the whole movie's ruined.
But it's absolute revolution. It's the rising up of a rebel army. It's essentially Islam. Yeah. Let's be very clear. Spice is oil and Dune is the Middle East. And they're very clear about that in the book. You don't have to read very deeply that this was in the 60s. This is pre-Al-Qaeda. This is pre all the other stuff. But it was there's this substance that runs the universe and it's being controlled by tyrants who own a desert planet. And the secret of Dune is that it has the universal order is kept by the imperial army. And no one knows that the planet Arrakis, that Dune, has millions of inhabitants. Not thousands, not tens of thousands, millions and millions of inhabitants who are hiding, who are deeply well adapted to the environment, who are battle hardened, who will fling themselves on your swords, who are incredibly fierce warriors, and who are waiting for a messiah. And and guess what happens? So a fine book. Don't watch the movie unless you want to watch it ironically. And but do watch the miniseries. The miniseries are pretty good.
Okay, number five.
I like to read. I'm into freedom of speech and freedom of choice. I'm the kind of guy who likes to sit in a greasy spoon and wonder, gee, should I have the T-bone steak or the jumbo rack of barbecue ribs with a side order of gravy fries? I want high cholesterol. I want to eat bacon and butter and buckets of cheese, okay? I want to smoke a Cuban cigar the size of Cincinnati and a non-smoking septum. I want to run through the streets naked with green jello all over my body reading Playboy magazine. Why? Because I suddenly might feel the need to, okay, pal? I've seen the future. You know what it is? It's a 47-year-old virgin sitting around in his beige pajamas drinking a banana broccoli shake thinking I'm an Oscar Mayer wee.
Okay. Well, that's obviously Dennis Leary.
That is Dennis Leary.
He's doing a bit from, I forget what the album was called. Back when there were albums, it was either Everything Gives You Cancer, Everybody Smokes in Hell, or something like that.
No, this is actually a movie. This is Demolition Man.
Oh.
Sylvester Stallone and Dennis Leary.
Yes.
And Dennis Leary is a leader of a literal underground movement. They live in dirt underground.
Uh-huh.
And making jokes about restaurants and so forth. When this is a dystopian, you know, he literally lives in a hole in the ground. But clearly the script said, let Dennis Leary plug in his shtick.
Yeah.
And he's still got quite a crew. He's going to be in this new show this summer, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, playing uh-huh. the old dad,
yep.
you know. And
he was in the Spider-Man movie playing, the cop.
He plays a cop very often.
Boy, does he play. Yeah, cop and a fireman, man. Boy, yep. you know,
Irish working class.
Exactly.
So that and aging well. And redheads don't always age well. Redheaded men don't always age well, but he does. He's got the face that's just going to get older and grumpier and more resigned to the real world.
And then one day he woke up and he was Christopher Walken.
Yeah. Hey, there's a paycheck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That, so,
yeah. And somehow Dennis Leary's managed to capture Irish working class. I don't know how he's done that, other than that's his life.
That is who he is. Yeah. So, all right. Finally, number six.
It's time. Tell me, do you like music, Mr. Finch?
That music.
Yes, his music.
another Wachowski boys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, V for Vendetta.
A good one. Yeah, I might want to watch this one this weekend. I wonder if it'll be on for 4th of July, because it's such a...
I'll tell you a secret.
What?
I have the DVD.
Hey, that's why I married you. I married you for your V for Vendetta DVD, so that's good.
I have a whole stash of DVDs under the bed.
I know you do. Yeah. I know, because back when the days when you lived in the castle, you didn't have cable, but you had lots of videos. So.
I had lots of videos, and I had...
And a futon.
And a futon.
And that was pretty much it.
I had good internet.
Yeah, you did. You had good internet. That's true.
I had T1 internet. I ran cables.
Yeah. You ran cables through the house. Yeah, through the condo. And very high ceilings, which you don't have anymore. One day you're going to knock out all the ceilings of this house.
Yeah. And a whole bunch of kids are going to come tumbling down.
What?
Mom said I could have electronics in the bedroom.
They all just come tumbling. All these screens come down from the hole in the ceiling.
I have saved short video of my condo.
Yeah.
You
should show that off someday.
One of these days I will show what the castle looks like, where I used to live. I'll put it up somewhere. It's the video that the real estate people shot to sell it.
Show it off, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty typical condo for that neighborhood. But, the castle. You called it the castle for years and years.
Now I live in the Shire.
You do. You live in a hobbit house.
I do.
You really do.
And I'm friggin' Gandalf.
And you are.
I got a duck when I go through certain doorways.
He really does, and he has to wear a helmet in the basement. I'm not making that up.
My special helmet, my special basement.
Yes, he has to wear a bike helmet when he goes down to clean the basement because...
I don't have to, but I want...
You don't want to hit your head. Yeah.
There's certain places where if I stand up, I take one right in the noggin.
And you have bled. Your skull has bled.
I have bled for this place, for this land, this freedom.
I remember when you and I started dating and... I wasn't sure whether you should come to my house or not. I thought, oh, whatever. And then I realized, oh, you'll never live here. This is a dollhouse. You want to just, you can come down, but, you know, this is not ever going to be your home because I'm not threatening you with domesticity by having you over. Yeah. Turns out it wasn't a threat. It was a promise.
And one of the nice things about low doorways is I can stand up in the doorway when the girl's dates arrive.
Yeah, that's true. That hasn't happened yet, but it will.
And my head is not fully visible.
I have to say something else, Driftglass.
Sure.
I hate to break it to you.
Yes.
But Middle Child, whose 13th birthday is today, happy birthday, by the way, to Middle Child. The young lady who says Minecraft is awesome at the introduction to every science fiction university.
And Minecraft is awesome.
And she still thinks Minecraft is awesome. Is 13 years old today. So now I have two teenagers out of three.
Yes.
I do believe she is dating a young man on the internet.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
You're okay with that?
I believe you have vetted him to a
yes,
certain
degree. I'm aware of his mother on Facebook. So,
yes.
And he is just graduating from middle school, so he's just older enough to be interesting to her. Mm-hmm. And
he is several states away.
And he is several states away.
And that's the perfect person.
The perfect
guy for her.
For our girl is someone who is several states away.
Yep.
You're so funny because you are such a dad to them.
And
it happens so quickly. Wrapped themselves around your little finger.
Well, suddenly there was this other prime directive in my head.
It really was.
Rotate! Where'd that come from? Oh, well, you know, 4 million years of evolution. That's where it came from.
That's where it came from. Exactly. You want to riff on revolution in science fiction short stories for a minute?
It's a really common theme. I mean, it has to be because... Great fiction is drama, and drama is conflict. And conflict means something is being overthrown, or something is being challenged or overthrown. And almost always in science fiction, it's a state. It's the establishment, or it's some sort of dystopian future. Revolutions succeed or fail. The moon is a harsh mistress. Robert Heinlein, is the American Revolution on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much half of Philip Dick, or two-thirds of Philip K. Dick, is discovering the universe is not what you think it is. It's controlled by nefarious forces, and you do battle with them.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, in Ubik, this is not giving anything away, you discover that the virtual reality is actually people who are frozen. The war is taking place in their imagination.
Ah.
But there's always an uprising, always a revolution, always a mighty power to be overthrown in science fiction. So it's not like it's a rare thing to discover it. It is, however, a challenge to do it really well, to take on the topic, one of the 12 plots,
and
do them really well in an original way. And science fiction does that really remarkably well. So you can pretty much go through the entire canon of science fiction and pick out anything you want. Guns of the South, for example, was transporting weapons back to the Confederacy and giving Robert E. Lee AK-47s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's arming the rebels. Literally, you're arming the rebels, and you're making the war turn out a different way. So right down the line, River World, which is all of humanity wakes up on the banks of a giant river, is the journey down the river is to find out who did this and why, and ultimately probably wage war against them.
Let's not forget the most famous rebel in all of science fiction is Luke Skywalker.
Except that's not science fiction. Star Wars is not science fiction. No, you're absolutely right. It's the Rebel Alliance. It's the rising.
Of course, that's also Greek myth. I mean, that's where you really get into. We know where the story came from.
Yeah. So. Well, and spreading out a little bit to fantasy, the Game of Thrones is nothing but revolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
The entire story is overthrowing the status quo. The really brutally awful. Even the good people are horrible in Game of Thrones, and overthrowing the system. And Mr. Robot, to be very topical, is
overthrowing the system. It happens to be a banking system, but they control the world.
Well,
that is the assumption of that show. Yeah,
I have a feeling we're going to step down that rabbit hole a bit further.
Yeah, yeah, I think
find
so
out
too.
That it goes deeper than that. But it is a rich and wonderful genre in science fiction, and again, it only depends on how well you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do it extremely well. Some people do it not at all well. But it's there.
Wanted to talk a little bit about humans. We watched this new show on AMC. John Amato loves it, and Shock loves it as well.
Yes.
At Shock. And I thought it was maybe nobody cares about my opinion about it.
You do. Well, because
I thought it was standard robot science fiction fare.
Yes.
Well done, but the plot, although I think they went a little further with the whole chase scene and that element of it. I don't want to do spoilers, but there are chase elements to it and trying to find the special robot. That element of it is a twist, you know.
Yeah.
It's a standard twist, but it's a twist. This isn't just robots take over domestic life. It's more than that. But I as I said to Shock on Twitter, I said, you know, it's good. It's not Mr. Robot good, but it's good.
Yeah. It's perfectly serviceable fare.
Yeah.
It's not great. It's not terrible. It's well cast. It's, you know, clearly the people know their material.
Yeah.
They're quoting the singularity, the idea of a singularity, and that's good.
And they make a hat tip to Asimov,
and you have to. So watching it for what it is, it would be like watching, to take a terrible example, watching The Wizard of Oz and getting picky about the fact that the Tin Man can walk. You know, it's like, you have to sort of buy into the whole idea that these artificially, first of all, there's the idea that you would create human-shaped robots to do stuff that doesn't require. I mean, why do they have five fingers, Four fingers and a thumb. Why? Why give them heads at all? Why have, if you're creating functional machines, there is no reason in the world for them to have hair.
Well, the whole purpose of having that is so that they can be sex objects.
Exactly.
I mean, that's it.
But if you're creating robots to replace people in the tasks they do.
Doing tasks, right.
There's a very old science fiction story, I think Quimby Usiform Robots. It's really old, like 1930s or 40s, where robots start to go insane and smash things because they're unhappy. Why are they unhappy? Well, because the elevator operator robot has one job, pull the lever down, pull the lever up. But he has all this incredible extra capacity of having a head and two arms and two legs and eyes and things that he never uses. So
he loses his mind, quote unquote.
Yeah. He's bored out of his mind because all he does is this one thing. So you strip the robot down to its functional part and have it do the one thing it's designed to do.
Marvin the robot. It is Marvin, isn't
it? It is.
Brain the size of a planet.
And the idea that you would have what must be incredibly expensive machines.
Mm-hmm.
That are somehow the cost of your car, which is couldn't possibly be true, and you've made them millions of them, which couldn't possibly be true, in a global economy where human labor, is cheap.
Well, and the argument that the creator of these robots makes of we don't have to depend on exploiting Pakistani children to do our labor for us. We can have these, $300,000 units do the labor. And, I'm a radical when it comes to child labor, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that no capitalist is going to go on TV and say, we have to replace Pakistani children with these very expensive machines. You know, that's the reason you got rid of American factories and moved it overseas was to lower the cost of labor.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea that, it's a very old idea. This is Frankenstein. This is the new Prometheus. The idea that you would have this thing that looks like us but isn't us. And it plays on the theme of who gets to be human.
Who
gets to count as a human being? And how high up the sentient scale do you have to rise? Because if it's just reproduction and self-defense, like any animal does, then machines are there.
Yeah.
Machines can make other machines, and machines can be programmed to defend themselves. So the question is, at what point does sentience get into it?
Yeah.
And this is a problem, by the way, I have solved in a novel that I'll probably never write that has three or four, I think, really genuinely original science fiction ideas in it.
Oh, you ought to get to work on that.
one of these days I'll squeeze that in.
All right.
But it's a great theme. I appreciate the fact that people are taking science fiction seriously and they're putting
it's a fine
show. There's nothing wrong with it.
And AMC does really high quality shows, and this is one of them and worth watching, I think.
If you have read of the genre, if you have drunk deeply of it, you see the problems with the you have to be willing to suspend disbelief. And it gets harder when you have essentially anybody who wants one can buy what must cost the same as a space shuttle. And it just seems very unlikely that that's in our future in that way. But I understand as a writer the plot device necessity of having them look that way and behave that way and talk that way. And the idea that there's a small group of mutants that are genuinely a threat to humanity. I understand the attraction of that. So I want to see where they're taking this.
Yep. And it is, it's got an X-Men quality to it a little bit. But I was thinking as I was watching humans and, she's wiping down counters. They have a domestic robot in this thing. It's like, I have a domestic robot on my kitchen too. It's called a microwave.
Yeah.
It's shaped like a box.
Yeah. It does what it does
for me.
Yeah.
Dishwashers wash dishes and garbage disposals. Those things are perhaps if you could have combined robots with 17th century housekeeping, it would be really helpful to have someone who could in and milk cows and, grind grain and all of those sort of high maintenance jobs that need a lot of hands-on work. But
R2-D2 is the robot of the future. Not
really?
Hot, you think sexy that? Domestic maid, you know.
No, all right. Hot, sexy, quasi-agent domestic maid who's got a perfect body.
And I will add one more thing. I would not have watched this show at all, but Amato and Shock both said,
watch
it's great.
It.
Yeah. So, okay. And it's good.
It is good.
It's pretty good.
It is good. I don't think it's a waste of time to watch it at all. It's just, it's not Mr. Robot good.
No, it just isn't.
It just isn't.
And next week we'll do True Detective and tell you where it's going off the track.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I just want to kill that girl with the guitar in the bar.
At the Sad Bastard Bar?
The Sad Bastard Bar. Yeah. I just want to kill. Wow. I want to see her get killed.
Yeah, this Sylvia Plath Bar and Grill. Oh man.
Please.
Yeah.
Life is meaningless on my guitar.
Kill yourself. Yeah. I just happened to be watching Bound for Glory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's the Woody Guthrie story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, on her guitar, it should say, this machine kills everybody.
It's ennui.
It's funny. I mean, here's the problem with it. It's so bad.
You're killing me over here, Drift Glass.
What?
You're killing me over here.
I'm sorry.
Here.
It's so bad that it takes you out of the story like a bolt of lightning.
Oh, it does. It does.
Like,
it really
wow.
does.
Wow. And then to go back there, you know.
Yeah, and that she's singing again.
So you haven't killed yourself yet. You will eventually. Wow. Okay.
Man. All right.
If
and
they
on
throw
that,
in
on that note, we got to end this.
If they throw in the Star Wars bar in the third episode, you walk in and it's a bunch of aliens going doo doo doo. Yeah. I will give him big points, but
big
that's
point.
Not going to happen.
No.
Although it did have a surprise ending, I will say.
Yeah, it did.
Word about what it is.
Well, and I loved what you said. I did love what you said about the ending, though. That doesn't give anything away. Is they Sean Bean bagged him?
Yeah.
It might be a beanbag gun at the end of this episode. We don't know yet. It
might be a Sean Beanbag gun.
A Sean Beanbag.
Just look that up. You know,
yeah.
Trust
Sean Bean always gets killed in all these shows.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Sean Bean.
Poor
all
Sean
right.
Bean. All right.
Thank you, everybody. And thank you to Lawrence and Phoenix for sending these in.
They were wonderful. Thank you, Lawrence.
We'll be back next week. Let me say to people, we love you guys. I know I say that every once in a while, but to our listeners, much love to all of you.
Oh, man, I thought you were talking about me all this time.
Well, I do love you, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, we love you guys.
We really do love our listeners.
It's a pleasure to do this.
Yeah, it really is. Okay. Thank you, Driftglass.
Thank you.
I love you.
Love you, too. Bye.